Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 255 for March 9th, 2020. We are recording this live at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is David Cosmer. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we have a special episode. I asked the option professor to join us to give his market analysis and talk about the S&P 500 and the report from last night. And if you have not had a chance to take a look at last night's report, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can get access to either the web or PDF version there. So this is mainly going to be one where the option professor gives his full market analysis. This has always been a popular thing. He does a really good job with that. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David. And welcome everybody here to the broadcast. I'll be giving you my opinions and my observations on what's going on in the market. I'll review what we have been seeing and what we're obviously seeing now, and what our best guess is that could be coming forward. With regards to some disclosures again, or disclaimers, there is substantial risk of loss in short-term and option trading. It's not right for everybody, and you should consult your brokerage firm, your broker, and your advisor to discuss your own suitability. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. And what I'd like to do here today is, give you a quick review. The stock market, as you can see today, is being hit very hard, let's talk about how we got there. You know, our view is that the market had resistance at that 3050, 3100 area, and between October just recently in February, we ran up to 3400 on the S&P. Our feeling was that it was not warranted based on a number of factors, including the fact that GDP wasn't moving, and in fact, around the world, it was shrinking. The fact that earnings were not growing very fast, but everyone thought in the fourth quarter they would, and also the valuations were quite high, and many, many other factors. So we did think that an exhaustion area might be 3,400 area, and that certainly has been the case. We've seen a big reversal here because of many reasons. One is that earnings visibility and growth visibility is very, very limited because of not only the virus, but also the fact that economies around the world were slowing well before the virus, and this is exacerbated or brought to light. You know, the two numbers that, we didn't think it was a real rally, and the transportation average and the Russell also confirmed that for us. Neither one of those indexes made a new high over their 2018 highs during that advance. So that was a non-confirmation that has obviously saved us from being bullish at the wrong time. Now, as far as today and what's going on, I'm going to go give you a little bit of information that I'm gleaning, and then I'm going to go around the horn to different sectors and see what's going on. But when we were up at the higher levels, I did discuss the possible ways of reducing risk. And on the option side, people do covered call writing at the high points to try to reduce some risk, although it's limited to the premium you receive. The other is a collar strategy where you sell the out of the money call and then you buy a put. And then, of course, you can do the strategy called married puts, where you just simply buy puts against your stock. And of course, you know, those who did that when the markets were way up did pay a little bit of premium or insurance cost. But again, that has offset a significant amount of risk that we see here today. The other way of trying to reduce risk is your asset allocation. You know, some people go 80% stock, 20% bonds when they're very aggressive, or 90% stock, 10% bonds. And then the most popular seems to be 60-40 or 55-45. Well, the way you adjust your risk on something like that is you simply increase your bond exposure. And then, of course, you decrease your stock exposure. So if you were 80-20 and you wanted to become more conservative, numbers like 60-40, 40-60, 20-80 would be considered by some. Of course, there's no assurance on anything, but that would be considered to be less exposed to stock, ergo a more stable principle. And of course, 60-40 going down to 40-60 or 20-80 would be also a way of trying to reduce your exposure by adjusting your asset allocation. Now, normally we go over questions today, like where's the market going to be on Friday? But that just seems like folly because of one main thing that I talked to people about last week, and that is the VIX. The VIX has also been very good to me as far as indicating when things are changing. Now, my view on the VIX is as simple as this. When we're between 10 and 15 on the VIX, you tend to be in a bullish market. When you go between 15 and 20, it's more of a sideways meandering market. When you get above 25, the risk increases substantially that you're going to have a significant correction. And of course, if you get above 30, 30 or 40, you have the risk of going into an abysmal type of loss. To give you an idea of the current one we're involved in, the 20% drop basically that we've seen from the highs to this level in the amount of days it took to get down here was about 15 days. During 1929, they say the from the high to the 20% drop took, I believe, 42 days. And even during the crash of 1987, where we did have that big drop in one day, that took 55 days. So this speed of the decline is significant. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we had a rally from October to February that shouldn't happen. And, but it did. And again, it made the playing field very, very unbalanced. And so now we have had a correction, and the correction today is very significant in that we went from 2350 December of 2018 to 3400. So if you take 61% or so Fibonacci number off of that rally, you get about 2750. So I don't think it's coincidental that we have stopped at 2750 on the S&P. But for gosh sake, your VIX is, let's look at the VIX before I take it away. The VIX is at 52.39. I mean, look at that. That's tremendous, right? And if I go to all data, it'll put a very long perspective on it. So basically, when I go to all data and I get that screen up, let's see if I can get that up for you. Get a basic chart. And but obviously, you're going to see that this 60 number is a very huge one based on history. So for the sake of showing you what I'm talking about, let's put that up and then let's give you an idea. There's your S&P. We're going to put the VIX back up and you get an idea of what I'm talking about. I think it hit 90 at one point, maybe during the crash of 08, hit 90 during the crash of 08. But since then, 50 was the ceiling, right? So now we've hit 62. So that's not good. And we're still above 50 at 52. So where's the market going to be by Friday? It could be anywhere. Now, the thing here is again, I'll show you another thing that's concerning to me, is that the transportation average continues to be under pressure. Now, obviously, airlines and things like that is part of it, but the railroads themselves are also giving it up a little bit. And as you can see, if we go back on a five-year chart on the transport, and again, because of air traffic and things like that, it could be skewed a little bit aggressively. But today, we're at 8,200 area, and that 8,200 area coincides with the what? With the high points here in around 2016. Yeah. So, I mean, right around here in 2016, we went down to the 8,000 mark, okay? And so we're down there now. The S&P during that period down there is around 2,200. So I don't know that we're going to replicate what the transports are doing, but it's cause for concern, and that's why I'm mentioning it. As far as oversold is concerned, the moving averages on the S&P, 3,200 and change is the 50-day, and 3,000 and change is the 200-day. So the market is now, getting to be substantially underneath the averages, but I don't know that there's not more to follow. My feeling is that, the market has got to price things at some point on valuation of earnings and GDP growth. So the two things that got me going when they came out, the two economic numbers, was the China 35 on the PMI, and Japan's GDP for Q4 being minus 7.7, I believe. So, we've got a situation here where it's obviously very, very volatile because we were in a very overbought condition. Backing it was very much nothing because the earnings and growth were not there. And now, of course, people think the Fed can help you, but the Fed can't make you leave the house and do things. It can just make money cheap. What the Fed could do, though, and what I hope they do, is in 08, they did open the Fed window to the dealers who are taking in a lot of corporate debt and that type of thing. And of course, it's hopeful that they will do that again to try to provide liquidity. Because obviously one of the big risks right now is obviously the systemic liquidity of the system, because you have a lot of people selling and nobody buying. And again, passive investing worked very well on the way up because people were just buying and holding, right? So you had a no seller type environment when the market's rising because all the passives are sitting there. But now if they see this kind of volatility, obviously they could be motivated to sell. And I think there's $6 trillion in the ETFs that have grown over the last 20 years or so. And so obviously, we don't need that type of, selling pressure. So that's, some of the things going on now as far as what I'm seeing. As far as buying into this market, obviously you're catching a falling knife and the knife is very sharp. Are there some values out there? Well, you would think there's some values out there. On the oil sector, they're just getting whacked beyond belief as far as in the leverage ones particularly. Now, on just giving you XLE as a broad ETF, you'll get an idea here on a five-year graph, exactly the kind of liquidation that's going on. The big thing that happened over the weekend was Saudi, increasing production and really trying to get Russia under that $40 a barrel so that they put pressure on Russia. Some people thought 40 was their magic number. And obviously now you've got a real war out there of supply and the demand is all dried up because of the fact that, demand is light. And so that's why you get 20% drop in an index. And some stocks like Occidental Petroleum, who bought Anadarko, has a lot of debt on their books. They actually are getting whacked very hard. I think we're down like 40% or something like that at one point here today. Companies like Exxon, Chevron, and others, they may be able to benefit longer term from this because the frackers are, the shale, business is in some pressure because they need money to keep going. And so they may have to turn to consolidation as a way out. And so longer term, the major oils could actually benefit because they were kind of slow to get into the shale deal. And now with all the shale deals on sale, longer term, it might be a good situation for them in a consolidation where they get to pick up the shale businesses at a percentage of the dollar. So that's something to think about longer term. The big key, as I've told everybody on this, is, what is this virus going to be? Is it going to be gone by June, July when we have the summer? Or is it a situation where it's going to be a long time and basically be around until the vaccine shows up? Obviously, the former is much better than the latter. And we don't know the answer to that. And, we might not know until we do know. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to predict. But that's a very big question out there, is obviously the duration of the virus. And again, is it transitory, which would be maybe, summertime it's gone, or is it going to be more long lasting and it's a wait for the vaccine type thing? But, the two things that are very key right now is the Fed stepping up and providing good liquidity for the system, including dealers. And also, it's very important that there's fiscal stimulus coming out of Europe, Asia, and the U.S. in a coordinated effort to kind of stabilize the markets at some point. But with the VIX at 50, like I told people when the VIX was at 30 last week, the expectation should be of wild swings. One gentleman I heard was talking about that when we do hit a low point, you may get a rally, and that rally may also come back down and retest the lows when the economic numbers actually start coming out. Because obviously, people are shocked when they see minus 7% in change in Japan on the GDP. They're very shocked when they see 35 on the PMI in China. And so you just don't know exactly how shocked they're going to be if our numbers start looking a lot different than they do now. Again, one of the problems with bidding up the market so high without the fundamentals of earnings, growth, and revenues, et cetera, is that you run the risk of an event like this occurring. And then again, you'll have a situation where there's no buyers and all sellers. And again, order imbalance is what causes a lot of these crises, both on the upside and downside. That's some of the things going on right now with the oil. Big drop there. Some of your bigger companies also have had a bounce, but they went down to some pretty big numbers. And the tech, the MAGAs, let's look at the MAGA. We'll start out here with Google. They went down to 1,200, and you can see 1,200 is an area, where there could be some support and it bounced out of. It's up $50 off of that. Still down about 4% for the day, which is a lot better than the general market.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
So on your screen right now, you're only seeing part of the chart, right?
No, I'm seeing the whole chart. Should I move it up? Like, how high does it have to go to get? That's why I was wondering. Is that a good level?
Yeah. I don't understand how that's possible, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, can you tell me right now when it seems like
now we're seeing the whole chart.
Okay. All right. So now I'll just lift the chart up a little bit. I'm sorry about that, guys. I don't know exactly what you're seeing because I'm sharing the chart.
We should be seeing seeing exactly what you're seeing. I don't know.
Yeah, but this has happened before once, so I'm not exactly certain why. But there's the chart on Google. Can you see that pretty good?
Yeah. Yeah, now we can see the whole thing.
Yeah, so now I know exactly where to put the charts for the rest of the broadcast. Again, Google, going back here to 2016, you know, is has a lot of congestion at 1200, so that's why it probably bounced there, okay? And again, you know, a lot of people, if they are still believing it's transitory, because again, the banks are in good shape financially, and unemployment is still at 3.5%, so you know, we don't want to go nutty with negative news. In my view, it's really just repricing the market for what? For the fact that the earnings temporarily are going to be suspended, right? Because they don't know what it's going to be, and companies are not declaring because they don't know what it's going to be, and that's obviously going to have to be factored into the price. Now, we may think that the fourth quarter of this year, the world will look 100% different, but they can't price it on what you think might happen in the quarter number four. They got to price it on what's going on. And what's going on is obviously GDP is under a lot of pressure. Earnings are very unknown. And obviously those two factors are making the market have to reprice. And it's certainly coming off of a very high extended level. So again, you know, if you took out the entire run, which they've just done, which started in the 2800-2900 area, you got to be here. And again, the concern is with the transports going down to the more excessive levels, that there could be some more drops involved. You know, obviously it's guesswork where anything may stop because it'll only stop when it stops. But I broke down a few different levels. One was this 2750, 2850 level because it's the 50% correction and the 61%. So this is a neighborhood where it could bounce from. Then, of course, underneath that, you have got the 2350 to 2550 area, which is the December low from 2018, and basically some more support around 2550, 2600. So that's your next region. And then the final region is your 2000 to 2300 area, which would mean that you're going back and wiping out everything that happened after Trump was elected. Okay. Now, as far as what the transports have done, they've kind of gone back to that level. And that's obviously concerning. So again, if you do get a point where it does stop and then it rallies, it would be something maybe to lighten up your positions on until you have some proof that this thing has abated and earnings are going back to normalization. Okay, I'm going to move the screen up so you can see it. This is Microsoft going back 5 years. Again, the growth sector of the stock market has been the last to go. In other words, we've seen drops in industrials, and we saw drops in materials, and we've seen drops in energy and consumer discretionary a bit, but we have not seen too much in the growth sector, and the growth sector is now obviously coming back in line a little bit, but it is still trying to hold up a little bit from where it is. You know, around the world, you got Brazil down 10%. I think they froze their markets, and their currency, I think, is hitting a record low. You have got Germany with their yields at minus 0.1 or minus 100 basis points underneath zero. You obviously already talked about Japan. And then, of course, China, you know, because it seems to have been 8 weeks after they started quarantining that this thing settles down in some regions. So the bottom line is we're now quarantining. So some people are thinking 8 weeks out is a timeline that they're using to see if, in fact, things might settle down, referring to the China timeline. Once they started quarantining, about 8 weeks later, things started to settle down. I guess some of their numbers are either moderating or declining now, which is great news. And then, of course, we have to go through some things here. Now, again, some companies in the corporate credit sector, you know, that do not have good free credit percentages, where they have plenty of capital to pay off their interest, etc. Those companies are the ones that are most susceptible to problems right now because of the fact that obviously we are having an interruption on revenue to some degree. Now, the thing is how many more closures are there going to be? I understand things like the Javits Center is reducing some of their shows for temporary. And so, you know, there is steps being taken. And so they're thinking that 8 weeks out from where these things are going on, you know, which would take you, what, April, May, and then by June, you know, we hopefully could stabilize and turn the corner, not unlike what China had done. But that's a big hope and certainly not for sure. So Microsoft is also under some pressure today. It hit the 150 number and bounced off. You can see this 140 number on Microsoft is interesting as far as that. Volume is huge because, again, investors have been holding these stocks, as you can see, for a very long time. And now they want to get out. And obviously, if they want to get out in the kind of volume of 35 million shares, you know, there's not 35 million buyers over there. And that's the problem. That's how you go down 4.5% a day. And again, at one point, probably it was down, obviously down $5 more. So you know, that's some of the situations going on right now. The Treasury market, you know, does look like it's having a huge blow off. I'm going to put TLT up on the screen so you can take a look at it and then get the chart up there. See, as you can see, you know, TLT going back 5 years. Let me scoot this thing up a little bit for you. All right. All right. TLT, the volume is enormous because the yields on the 30-year and 20-year are under 1%. I mean, people are now loaning the money to the government for less than 1%, and they don't owe you the money back for 30 years. That's pretty incredible. So as you can see, the move from 110 in late December to where we are now is $60. And that's a very, very large percentage move. So again, it did hit 180. Actually, this chart only goes 180. It's actually hit 180. So put another 10 points on this thing, and it gives you an idea. Once you broke above 150, that was your signal that rates were going to be going lower. And obviously, that signal was very good. Let's see. Now, another area that you guys are probably interested in is the gold area. Well, let's do this. Let's look at crude because that's the culprit today. And let's see what that might do. Again, some of the oil people that I listen to, they think we can obviously go into the 20s, which we did already today. So that's no big forecast. And I looked on Bloomberg TV. They had a chart, and the chart longer term had a channel, and the channel did come in even under 20. So there's a potential that we're even going to go down there. But again, some of the guys who are in that business do believe that somebody's going to scream uncle, meaning Russia or Saudi. And if they scream uncle, that ends the situation a bit. The storage companies have been doing great because people are trying to load up on the oil while it's down. And then basically they're looking for places to store it. And so the companies that are into storage are doing quite well. That might be something to look into. Again, the companies that do oil storage, because again, with these prices at these levels, people want to, you know, companies or people want to buy and then they want to store it. But right now you can see that, you know, we're going back 5 years and we have blown out that low that happened in 2016. That might have been why it bounced at 27, because that looks like right around 27. So again, that's why we are, that's the direction of the oil. And again, that's the view that I can see that makes some sense. Still risk of going into the 27s like we did earlier today. Outside risk under certain situations of going down underneath 20 temporarily, short term. That should create tremendous values in some of these things, you know, longer term. And then basically they're looking for, by the fourth quarter, that things may be looking quite a bit different, particularly again, if somebody screams uncle. You can't have Saudi Arabia and Russia, you know, pumping out oil, trying to kill this shale business, which is essentially what's going on. And if they tried this again back in 2016, as you can see, they tried to do it. And all that happened was shale got better as far as their finances. Shale got better because of, you know, the way they were operating their business. This time, what might happen is shale might be bought out by what? The big majors. And then again, now you've got a big major in there that has regular oil, plus they have the shale, and that could make them stronger companies going down the road. As far as free credit balances, free cash flows are concerned, I've been told that, you know, companies like Exxon, you know, still is in fairly good shape, at least for the time being, to pay their dividend. And of course, at 7% or better on Exxon, let's take a look at that. That might be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. There's Exxon. Let's see what it looks like. Yeah, Exxon's down 10% at 42. It hit 40. I'm showing you a longer term graph so you can put the move in perspective. Now, again, let me just get this thing to come up and quit jumping around so much on me. Okay, here you go now. Now, you see, we're down here at 40. I mean, you know, 5 years, I mean, that's the lowest it's been at a long, long time. Dividends up to 8% or better. P ratio is at 12, but of course, who knows what the E is in this environment. And then, you know, basically, so, you know, this is a very large company. The volume you can see is just really huge. So that means everyone, you know, 40 million shares, okay? So a lot of people getting out. Again, you don't want to be the first one in a burning building, but this is not something you want to not think about or look at because, again, you know, this thing used to be $90, you know, almost $90 in 2018. So it's, you know, less than, more than half price. So again, you know, if they are going to honor that dividend, and so far people that I listen to believe they will, and if they're going to be able to take advantage of a shale on sale on a longer term basis, this might have some interest. Again, right now you're catching a falling knife, and again, the knife looks like a machete. All right, let's see other sectors here. The banks, oh boy. Well, you know, when you take away the ability for them to earn money on deposits, and then of course, you know, their margins on free credit goes out the window, that's not good for the banks. And Bank of America is one of the ones that can get hit. Also, you know, if they don't loan money because they don't want to loan money at such a low rate, or they're concerned concerned about people's balance sheet, that's another problem. So this thing went down to $21. Now you're talking about all the way back to here at 2016. You see this 2016 area? You know, that's where this thing just hit today, you know? And so if the S&P is going to go down there, there's still obviously more room to go. Lord knows what's going to happen, but this thing definitely is down to a price and the yield is up to 325. I'll show you some other ones that people find interesting right now is Citigroup. The price to book is very, very attractive on both Bank of America and Citi, tangible book. And so that makes it interesting here too. And so here on Citi, you're getting 384 according to my screen. The PE ratio is obviously very low. The stock hit 50 almost. So there's that low from 2018 that's been hit. And it also coincides with the highs here in 2016. So Citi down here at $50, you know, is somewhat interesting. And the last time volume hit these levels was at a low point at 50. So don't know if this is going to hold. Don't forget, this chart does not show the move today down to 50. So again, the dividend yield is getting rather high. Another indicator that the market was very advanced is if you look at your dividend aristocrats that constantly are increasing their dividend every year, but their yield was only 1% or something, that tells you the stock has gone ridiculously high, okay? And so that was another indicator, the low dividend yields of some stocks, even the ones that raise dividends all the time, like the aristocrats, something to keep in mind. Obviously, if these companies can find a floor and rally, that dividend yield obviously will be lower as a percentage of the stock if the dividend remains the same. There's a lot of ifs there. But anyway, the banks are obviously getting whacked very, very hard. And again, their balance sheets are not bad, but how much demand are they going to get for loans and how many loans are going to make? And of course, their ability to make money off deposits, is going out the window with the drop in rates. These are problems that are going on. Let's what's going on in China, FXI. FXI is, according to my screen here, it still looks like it's hanging in there. Okay, so this one has not broken to the downside. And, the big one over there is Baba. That 200 number was a big number for Baba. Let's see if it got taken out. Baba at 200 was a big number. Taken out by not that bad. Went down to 193. Okay, so you can see this number's here. Let me move the screen up again for you. You can see what I'm seeing. Okay, get it down. Here we go. Yeah, so you can see these high points in 19, right? Right around 195, 190. That's where it's been bouncing off of, okay? And the trend, if you take the former line here, 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 and here, probably takes you out here. So, I don't think, again, this is a very hopeful statement, but when these guys did the quarantine, 8 weeks out, things started to normalize a bit. And of course, they did a ton of stimulus. So if we are lucky enough to have that occur, and we're now quarantining, then you're talking about April, May, and then by June, hopefully, we would see some kind of a turn in it. And then I'm not saying everything's going to go way back up to where it was, but at least it'll stop dropping and maybe give you some bounce or some stability in what is a very, very unmoored stock market right now. Let's see any other sectors here. Hang on a second here. I went over the weekend and I did a tremendous amount of work going on over the sectors. Healthcare. Okay, let's take a look at healthcare. And UNH is the big one there that people look at. Let's just take a look there because people think that there's some value to the healthcare. And let's see what it looks like. Yeah, it's only down 3.5%, much less than the overall market, right? And again, this chart doesn't show we went to 259. Okay, so the bottom line is it still seemed like it's hanging in there. How about the drug companies? PFE, Pfizer, okay, went down towards 34. Right now it's down 3%. Yield is 447. Let's take a look at Merck. Okay, Merck is down about 3.5 as well. Hit 75 or so. Okay, so basically that's basically what we're looking at here on the drugs. There, the healthcare is hanging in there pretty good. Tech is the one that has some, right now they seem to still be holding on to tech pretty good. Okay, I mean, it's obviously correcting like everything else, but there's still that hope that the growth in the tech sector and some of the other areas, maybe even healthcare, may still occur, despite the fact that in the short run that we are seeing quite a bit of a drop. Let's take a look at some of the other ETFs that are into different things, and let's see how they're working out here. Communications, we'll use some of the funds from Vanguard, the ETFs over there, which could be any ETF, but we're just going to use them as an example here. They're down about 5% on communications. You can see that's way down there as well. And on a five-year basis, it's getting down there outside of this drop here that we saw, and that was in December, way down here. So again, there is room to go down if these things are going to go down to the December 2018 lows, like the transports have done. There's no assurance of that, but that's the risk. And so you have to bear that in mind. Industrials are definitely way down. Materials are definitely way down. Real estate's giving it up. Utilities are even rolled over a bit today. Let me show you that. So it's really nowhere to hide kind of thing except money market fund right now. And even you know, there we go. Again, another big drop in utilities here. So again, you know, some people have to sell these things because why? They have other losers. So that's one of the problems when you have a market board that's going down. Some people are selling winners to pay off some losers type of thing, because the utilities had been quite a decent winner for a while. We went over the financials. We went over energy, consumer discretionary. Let's see what's going on there. 165, we're down 5.25%. Obviously, still under a lot of pressure, but still there's your December 2018 low. So that shows you that there is still potentially some more risk if it wants to go. Let's see if there's any other sectors I didn't hit. That's pretty much across the board, you know, what most of the sectors are looking like. Let's look at some individual stocks people might want to take a look at. You look at General Motors, okay? And again, what people are saying is you look for companies that have good balance sheets, that have, you know, good cash on hand, and you try to see if they are getting thrown out with the bathwater. And so General Motors is yielding 6%, and it's down here in the 25 area. So is that a bargain down there? Only time will tell, but it certainly is at a discounted level, and sometimes that can be an opportunity. Distressed debt people are also around looking at the triple B's and the B's that might have problem with their cash flows. So in the credit markets, again, in the debt markets, the spreads ran around 550 earlier today. Last time we had a growth scare, basically they blew out to 800. So on the junk debt, again, there could be some more blowout there. But that's another area to look into if the spreads get to 800 or more, because that historically has been a time where the high yield has been a better value. To give you an idea on high yield real quick before I go over some other stuff, high yield, definitely giving it up here today earlier. Let's see what's going on now. They hit 80 today. Okay, so now you're down here where this low was for, again, this is your low for December of 2018. So it already has gone down to the 2018 area, 80. Okay, and look at the volume. That's off, you know, that's, again, 42 million shares. I mean, that's a ton of volume. Okay, so anyway, that gives you high yield. That's on the defensive, but it has already taken a lot of air out of the balloon. And again, if the Fed opens up the window to the dealers may have liquidity to take in the debt so they can stabilize this high yield market. Possibly. That's the hope. Okay, now going back to some other stocks, you know, if you are looking at, we already showed you Exxon and some of these other companies in oil like Halliburton is single digit. You know, you get under 10, you know, to me, it's like buying an option. It either is going to go to zero and you lose all the premium like you would on an option, or you're buying something that over time will go back up. So Halliburton is down in single digits at 8.25. It went to $8 a share. You know, are they going out of business? Don't buy it. If it's a long-term situation that could turn around, if oil turns around, then it's something to look at. Another company that distributes generic drugs. I don't know if they're going to be the distributor of this or not, but you know, that's down again. That's down 12% to $9, and that's Teva. So that's under a lot of pressure. I don't know if they'll benefit or not benefit. Retailers, you know, Macy's. I mean, you know, they're way down, and their dividend has been ridiculous. It's at 14.5, and that's down 10%. Again, are these guys going out of business? Maybe. Do they have real estate that could be beneficial to sell if they were liquidated? Maybe. So the bottom line is you know, there's some real dislocations going on here. Let me think of some others that come to mind here. In the oil sector, we already went over Exxon, and, you know, Chevron's another one, huge. I think it's down to about 80. You know, that used to trade 100, 120. Now it's at 80, down 14%, dividend 634. British Petroleum got hit pretty good here today. I think it was down 20%. British Petroleum, let's see, went down to 24. It's at 25. Yield is at 981. So again, you've got to ask yourself, and the volume's huge, is Russia and Saudi Arabia going to continue a fight that looks like it's extremely negative for the world's economies and very negative for sentiment and everything else? You know, the two big words now looking forward that you have to keep in mind is the word wealth effect. And again, you know, when people get their statements at the end of the March, if we're at these levels or lower, they're going to maybe find that very disconcerting. If in fact they can get this thing down in the next week or so and then have that bear rally by the end of the month, so the statements go out with a little less damage than we're looking at now, that would be very helpful. Because again, a lot of passive investors, you know, they know the markets are very unstable now, but they haven't seen it in ink yet, meaning on their statement. So again, you know, sometimes I've seen where in the beginning of the month, a lot of damage is done, and then by the end of the month, there's some recovery, which mutes the fact that the damage inner month was tremendous. So again, that's another thing to keep in mind a little bit. Let's see, if I look at my notes, if there's anything else. year. Oh yeah, what about Tesla? That's one people were kind of riding high on. Let's see how Tesla's doing today. I heard it was down quite a bit. Let's see what it's doing. Yeah, down 71. You know, still up on the year, I guess, but certainly has given up the $1,000 mark quite a bit. Again, they are starting to sell anything they have big winners in as well to try to offset some of the negatives that are going on in the portfolios. Let's see what else we've got here. On the high yielder, some people were looking at Kraft. You know, I believe it's there you go. You know, Kraft went down quite a bit, but some people still think their debt might be interesting. But again, 24 down 7%. They're certainly not being immune to what's going on. The yield 6.65. You know, the question on dividends, they all look juicy, but are they going to cut them? And how do you try to gauge that? You look at their free credit balance ratio. There's a percentage. And if it's 10, 12 or better, people tell me that that's a pretty good ratio for their ability to make the payment. Now, that doesn't mean they wouldn't cut it anyway. But again, there are some pretty juicy dividends out there. But the caveat emptor is that those dividends could be cut. Let's take a look at, what's going on with gold. Because what I've been seeing in gold is that 1700 number has been problematic. And it's gone up there and it went through there a little bit, now back down. And I've also noticed that the gold and silver shares have not really participated. Now, let's see what today brings. Okay, the four that I look at generally is the GDX, and the GDX is down today. Okay, so, you know, went up towards 32, then back down. So, you know, again, gold is getting to be a little bit of a crowded trade, because everyone says buy gold as alternative. It's a hedge against this. Hey, listen, when debt is a problem, and I think debt is a problem, and you have to refinance just to stay afloat, which a lot of companies are going to have to do, that doesn't sound like it's inflationary. It sounds deflationary. That's probably why gold isn't following through. Now, was I bullish on gold when the GDX was 14, 16, 18? You bet I was. Now up at 32, not so much. Why? Because you got to break above 32 and 30 and hold for it to go to the higher levels. Okay? Because look, on the five-year basis, it's at the high. So why do I want to be in here adding or with a huge amount of exposure? What you might want to do is either reduce your exposure and wait for the breakout above 32, or if you're down there at the lower levels and you still want to have that percentage in there, then you sit on it. But as far as it going through the roof, I don't see it in an environment where debt is really the problem in valuation and certainly demand. I mean, why do you think the stock market's going down in part? You know, we have a supply shock, but now we got a demand shock potentially. And that's not, I don't think, bullish for inflation or anything like that. Let's take a look at the next one, which is the juniors. And these are more volatile. And as you can see, it did not even take out the high of a few years back. Let's see here. Give me another one. Oh, there you go. Okay. So you can see right there, it did not take out that high of 50, and it has definitely rolled over. So the 2016 high, the juniors did not take out. That's not bullish. Okay. So anyway, I'm not saying I'm bearish on gold. I'm just from Missouri right now. You know what Missouri means? It's the show me state, right? All right. Now let's look at your silver. Okay. On silver, what do you got? You got another deal where, again, nowhere near where the highs were on the SIL. And then it had a lot of trouble at 35, and now it's reversed back to the downside. Okay. So again, and this is an industrial metal. Now, people were saying that silver would be a better deal looking forward because there was a spike up in the gold to silver ratio last week. Obviously, that's not really materializing. I think the gold to silver ratio is hitting around 100, which is huge. But that particular ratio and that particular historical is not working right now. Okay, so you can see silver is another one that, and here's one that I was quite interested in, which was the juniors. And I thought it looked like it going pretty good at 11 or 12 and 13. And then look, I'm sure 11 or 12. And then look what's happened now. We're down very sharply, and it looks like it's giving it up. And it's nowhere near the high of 2016. So as far as the metal's concerned, there's a lot of ads out there, a lot of people pounding the table on them. And, again, I was bullish at lower levels, but now no way, Jose, until we get taken out this resistance. So on the juniors, I'd like to see 12 and a half get taken out, which is basically the high of the year, because that opens the door for the other numbers, right? And on GDX, I'd love to see it above 30, 32. That opens the doors for the higher numbers. If you can't get through the ceiling, you can't make a higher floor, right? That's my view. All right. Another thing that people are interested in is the U.S. dollar. But the currencies have been relatively stable around the world, except for Brazil. But their currency has never been stable, I don't think. Anyway, dollar index is breaking down. Like I said, and to people who ask, the trading zone on this has been about 99.5, peak to 100, and then 95. Okay, so you see 95 is right here. So we broke through 95, and we're down here. If we break through this like a knife through butter, and you see 94, I think it opens the door for what? 88 to 90. One of the reasons we have been having such a strong dollar is because we had what? A yield advantage. Our interest rates on our deposits were way higher than Europe and Asia. Well, what happened now is that advantage went out the window. When that advantage goes out the window, they throw the U.S. dollar out with it. So again, and this is really not that good for the gold either. The dollar's losing value. In fact, it was hard to understand, almost as hard to understand as that rally we saw in stocks between October and February. What the heck's it going up for? We got no GDP growth. We don't have any earnings and revenues growth. What's it going up for? And the world economies are all either flat or going into recession or contraction. So this thing here, the dollar was rising and the gold was going up. I couldn't figure that out. And now they're both coming down. So another thing that obviously in this day and age, some things don't make sense. But anyway, as far as the dollar is concerned, you know, and again, the dollar, you know, may be stable as well. Because what's your alternative? You're going to go over to Europe? Hey, and the euro? Those countries are not going anywhere. In fact, their banks are looking into the abyss right now. And that's one of the problems with our banks. When you cut those rates to zero and throw their profitability out, how are the banks going to make money? If you don't know what happens, go look at Deutsche Bank. It used to be $70. Now it's at $6. I'm not trying to be alarming, but you have to be aware. And again, so the risk of having no interest out there as far as deposits are concerned is that the profitability of the banks can be pinched. And that clearly, and growth can be pinched. And then, of course, that was a double whammy that hit the European banks, Societe Generale, and also places like Deutsche Bank. So anyway, the U.S. dollar, again, has lost some value. Our yield advantage threw it out the window. But I don't know how quick I'd jump into the euro or the yen. You know, the yen has a 236-to-1 debt to GDP ratio. Running into a currency with that type of debt to GDP ratio, and they just announced a minus 7.7% GDP print for the fourth quarter, I'm going to run into their currency? Maybe not. So anyway, you know, the dollar could be the one-eyed man in the valley of the blind, but it does have downward momentum. Anyone can see that who's looking at a chart, because you're down here in the 94 area, so you blew out these lows, okay? But you're still in the overall range of 88 and 100 back and forth, but it's just making a lower, the floor on it is now being lowered, and it's been lowered to about 94. All right, one other area that I can give you a little insight on here is agriculture. You know, how many times have we said we got a phase one deal and the soybean market is going to get all these orders from China? Well, you know, they're more talking about when's the next subsidy check coming in more than they're talking about this big buying binge. And the soybeans, as I've been explaining to people, as far as I can see, in my view, in my opinion, has a lot of resistance at that 950, right? And then above that, it has it at $10 because those are the lows here. So like gold, getting above 30 or 32 on the GDX, you know, if the soybeans got above 950 and then they got above 10, it would open the door to the upper floors. But if you can't get above those numbers, then obviously the upper doors remain closed to people, right? And today we're certainly not going in the right direction. We're down at 873, so we're probably going to test the 850 level. My feeling has been and still remains is that the growing season we're approaching, and excuse me, the planting season that we are approaching, and the growing season, which will be there afterwards, are going to be key as far as supply and demand dynamics in the soybean market. But again, this knight in shining armor named China buying the soybeans doesn't seem to have materialized. You know, one of the reasons is that the currency over in Brazil has collapsed, and they had big bumper crops. So as much as the Chinese love us, they probably love cheap prices better. And so going to Brazil and getting the soybeans has probably been another reason why there's been a bit of a lid on the soybeans themselves. Okay, I'm trying to think of some other sectors that I did not cover that I could talk about. Yeah, well, here's another thing as we're getting closer to the end. You know, say you thought the market is really going to be a buying opportunity, which means you're subscribing probably to the concept of what? That the virus is transitory and that sometime by June, July, it's going to be out of the way and suntan lotion is going to be replacing masks. Obviously, if that's your view, then you are looking at a buying opportunity during this drop during March. Now, there's 9 million stocks out there. What about the guy who just wants to do a one-stop shop? Well, what you could do is you look for your S&P, and for the part of the portfolio you want to have in S&P, you know, you do asset allocation. And for the part you want in the S&P, there's a thing called the spiders, right? Spies. So obviously it's getting down here. When you think it might be settling down, the part of your portfolio you want in large cap and diversified might be looking at that. Okay. You want to diversify some more into the more growth area. Then obviously you take a look at your Qs. And now you've got some growth in there with all the Microsofts and the Amazons and everybody else, right? And so that's down here at 196 with a low of 190. So again, you know, the low and the the low in last December was way down here. Don't know if it's going that low, but it looks like it's on its way where it could, if it has another leg down, could have some more action on the downside. But that would be your proxy to get involved in your growth area. So now you got the SPY and you got the QQQs, and then maybe you want to get something with the small caps. And so you look at IWM. And then with IWM, you now have representation in the Russell 2000. And the Russell 2000, again, bottomed out at 130 or so. It's at 132. So it's testing the December of 2018 lows. And if we stabilize somewhere around here, this is a neighborhood to start looking, because there's your low there. And then below there, you have to go way back down here to 100. So you're obviously hoping that this area between 120 and 130 might hold. And that's on your Russell 2000s, which again, never made a new high, just like the transports, and was an indicator that the move at 3,400 was a fugazi. Okay, now you've got your S&P, you've got your QQQs for your growth, and now you've got your small caps. Now maybe you want to go international, because they say, they've been saying for a long time, never seems to happen. But if the international is the way to go, EEM is now trading at 37. So now you're down here. And, 35, where it hit, 36 today, that's another area here. So this would, what? That would be your international exposure. Again, 30 seems to be the low from way back here. So you're at 35, 36 today. Okay, look in there if you want diversified into emerging markets. And then if you would like to, if you think Europe has any future, there's an ETF for that as well. And that's FEZ. And if you look at Europe, and then basically you're looking at, you're looking at this thing trading at 32. So you're down, let me do this again. There you go, at 32. So that's the number from 2018. See, that's why I'm coming back to that number. December 2018 is a number a lot of things are gravitating to. So you got to be careful now. And again, if you want to diversify into your gold and silver stocks as a part of your portfolio, then of course you can have your what? Your gold and silver GDX or SLIL or whatever you want to do. You want to do some juniors as well. But, you know, if you wanted to set up a diversified portfolio during this drop and you want to do the one-stop shop, you know, those would be the ones, in my opinion, that I would investigate and see if it fit my bill. And then, of course, then you have diversification and professional money management through the ETF. And it reduces the need for you to do stock picking, which some people don't find as much fun as they used to, right? And again, TLT is for your long-term bond. But again, it's hard to get excited about TLT when it's up at 180 today. And of course, it is parabolically 2, 3, 4 standard deviations from the norm. That's a hard time to get excited about it. All right, let's go put up the charts here and see what's going on real quick. And yeah, we're getting more acceleration to the downside, which is not shocking. Again, as long as that VIX is in the higher levels, you just have no idea what the prices are going to do. So it can be very, very volatile while the VIX is in those levels. We are coming up to the top of the hour, and I just wanted to say thank you for everybody for being here. I tried to give you my best opinions and my best guess on observations that I'm seeing. I've been doing this for decades. I've been through many of these crises before, but that doesn't mean I know exactly what's going to happen any more than the next guy. In fact, nobody does. So you have to use your asset allocation and do investing within your comfort levels and stick to it that way. If you have any interest in emailing me, simply just email me at optionprofessor@gmail.com. with any questions or comments. Otherwise, I hope all of you are hanging in there, and let's hope for the best, which hopefully means that this situation will be transitory. The Fed will do what they have to do to stabilize things with the dealers, etc. And let's hope that in the next couple of months here that things are looking a lot different than they do here today and this week. All right. Again, email me if you have any questions. Right now, I'd just like to thank everybody again for being here, and send it back to David. David, back to you.
All right. Thanks. Lots of good market info for a very active day on the market. So just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the reports or any of the past shows. Also, be sure to join us for Analyze Your Trade tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Jake Bernstein will be back as a guest. And the option professor will be here as the moderator. So, all right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.